Hey indie filmmakers, I'm Griffin Hammond in Almaty, Kazakhstan. It's my first visit to this beautiful city where I've been honored to participate in the inaugural Go Viral Festival, meeting creative people from around the world, attending seminars, and sharing what I've learned about filmmaking. So today I'd like to show you my 20-minute keynote speech called Make Content You Wanna See, plus questions from the Almaty audience, and afterward Nick joins me to answer your questions about H.265 encoding, filming two-person interviews, and what bit depth to shoot vlog in. Спасибо. Thank you so much for having me. I am Griffin Hammond. I'm a documentary filmmaker in New York City. And today I'm going to talk about my philosophy for making films. I'm going to talk about what I think makes videos go viral. And I'm also going to share some of my career advice. And I'll take your questions at the end. So please, I'd love to answer any questions you have. I tend to think that useful content is what goes viral on the internet. So that's why I think that you should make content that you want to see. Content that you find useful, you find entertaining, chances are an audience will find that interesting as well. This is a documentary that I wanted to see, so I made a documentary about my favorite hot sauce. It's called Sriracha, and this was me making it in 2013. I've shown this film a lot over the last 3-4 years, and the most common question I get at the end of a screening is, why did you make that? Or what was your inspiration as a filmmaker? And I made it because I wanted it to exist. I make films because I want to see them. I thought it was a film that should be a film. That's why I made it. I didn't make it to make money. I didn't make it because I thought it would land me a job. I just made it because it was important to me. This was a story that I wanted to tell. And that's a great reason to make a film, because if I'm excited about it, I have passion for the film, other people will like it too. It's been very well received, it's gotten great reviews, it's played at a lot of film festivals, it's won some awards, and it was a passion project. I made it for me, and it turned out to be a really smart decision for me. In fact, making this film, making Sriracha, turned out to be the smartest career choice I could have ever made. I didn't know that it would lead to things, but this film has done a lot for me. I made the film and started selling it on the internet. First, I did a Kickstarter campaign. Then, when the film was done, I put it on Vimeo. I put it on, this is Amazon. Right now, it's free on Amazon Prime. But hundreds of thousands of people have watched the film on Amazon. And it's actually made a big profit. The film has made $78,000, which is not supposed to happen with independent documentary film. Indie films are not supposed to make money, but this one has. But again, it wasn't the reason I made it. I think that because I wasn't trying to make money, it made money. But more importantly, it's led to a lot of other great opportunities for me. The real return on investment for this film is that it's landed me several jobs. I've been covering the presidential election for the last 2 years for Bloomberg News, and they hired me because they liked my documentary about hot sauce. Somehow I made a hot sauce documentary, and then I'm covering the White House and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. But you never know what work that you make is going to lead to something very exciting. So you just have to make a lot of work. Another thing that's come from this film is that people have invited me to teach around the world. I wouldn't be here in Kazakhstan. This is my first time in Kazakhstan. I wouldn't be here talking to you if it weren't for Sriracha. Sriracha is how the US State Department found me and started sending me around the world. I've been to Bahrain this year. I've been to Israel. I've been doing workshops for Panasonic in Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, Vietnam. I went to Germany this year. I've been all over the place. I'm going to Australia next month. So I never would have thought that this film would make money, it would get me a job, it would send me around the world. But I think it's because I made something that I wanted to see. that I made a film that was very important to me. As a filmmaker, or really anyone who's making content on the internet, you should think about your audience, clearly. If you're selling something on Kickstarter, you should price it the way that your audience would want to pay for it. When you make a film, hopefully you're making something that your audience will like. But it can be intimidating to think about the audience. You'll second guess yourself. You'll wonder, am I really making the right thing? I don't want you to think about your audience too much. Think about them, but not too much. I think if you just focus on what do you want, if you make the film that you want to see, chances are other people will want to see it too. Just focus on yourself. Think about what are you passionate about? What kind of film would you actually want to watch? And if you would want to watch it, there's probably other people that want to watch it as well. So think about your audience, but not too much. This is important because there is a lot of content out there. Every minute, 400 hours of new videos are uploaded to YouTube. 400 hours of videos every minute are uploaded to YouTube. So you have to ask yourself, why should anyone watch your thing when there's all this other content? And I think the most important consideration when thinking about your audience, is your content useful? Does it help people? Does it entertain people? Does it educate people? Why are you making it? Sometimes I see vlogs that people make, and I wonder, are they making this to help people, or are they making this just to make themselves feel good? Or it's narcissism. So I want you to think about why you're making content. And I think the best content on the internet cares about people. It wants to help people. Let's take a look at some of my most popular videos. These are some of the videos on my channel, on my YouTube channel, some of the videos I've made for other YouTube channels like Bloomberg, and I used to work for State Farm Insurance. And I'm not the most popular YouTuber. I have 65,000 YouTube subscribers. So there are more popular YouTubers here at Go Viral. But some of my videos have a decent amount of views. But for me, anything over a million views is, I mean, a million views is great for me. But these are my top videos. And I just want to point out that most of these are educational. This is a video teaching film production. So is this. This is teaching you how to use a camera. This is teaching you how to make a projector screen. This one, one of my most popular videos, is just teaching you how to do a print screen keystroke on a Mac. One of my biggest videos ever. It's not even a good video, but it's a helpful video. This is a video of my cat climbing the Christmas tree. So that's a funny video, not really educational, but it's offering something to the audience. It's funny. So is this. This is a video I made for Bloomberg starring Jeff Daniels. It's a comedy video. Comedy does well because you're doing something for your audience. You're helping them laugh. You're entertaining them. And this video starring William Shatner, this was a video I made in 2011 working with William Shatner. I was working at State Farm Insurance. It's the biggest automotive and home insurance company in the United States. I was a video producer for them. And William Shatner almost burned his house down with a turkey fryer. I don't know if you've seen these things. You put a turkey in the pot and fry it, and they're very dangerous. A lot of people burn their houses down this way. My challenge was to film William Shatner's story and try to get people to stop burning their houses down. So this is the end of the video, after he's already burned himself.
I loved you, but you only brought me pain. That fryer took so much from me. Mostly arm hair, little skin. But it gave me a healthy fear. Fire, metal, oil, and turkey are glorious when in harmony.
Turkey fryer. I always wanted to try that.
But their power is unrelenting in careless hands.
And it even has the dingle dangle.
This is a really old video for me. I made this 6 years ago, so I feel like I'm a much better filmmaker now. But this was a fun video. This is one of the most fun videos I've made in my career. And it was a very helpful video. People watched this and they learned not to burn their house down on Thanksgiving. In the United States, everyone cooks a turkey on Thanksgiving. And what happened is we made this video and it got very popular on the internet. A lot of journalists shared it. And then the number of people that burned their house down on Thanksgiving dropped by 67%. And it made millions of dollars in saved insurance. It also made millions of dollars in publicity. And it won a Silver Anvil Award, which is a public relations award. So it was a very effective video, but it was a helpful video. I think that's why it's one of my more popular videos, is it's weird, so it's kind of unexpected, which is a common attribute in viral videos. But it also helped people. There's a whole community of people that were helped by this. And then there's another element. I'll talk about the three things that I believe make videos go viral. I mean, that's why we're here, right? Why do videos go viral? And I trust Kevin Allaka. He is the head of culture at YouTube and Google Trends. He understands he sees a lot of viral videos, and he understands the three things that go into a viral video. And this is how Kevin puts it. Viral videos are usually unique and unexpected. And I think in a way, the William Shatner video worked because it was a very weird video. And I could have made a normal documentary. I'm a documentary filmmaker. I could have made a normal film, but I made this very strange video that was unexpected, and it was different than most insurance videos. You also need a community. I mean, anyone who has a big YouTube audience, they already have a community that will share the video. Who is going to share the video? If you don't already have a community, then you need to find the people that will like this video. People that might burn their house down on Thanksgiving might like this video. I like documentary because I feel like documentary films always have a community built in. Every documentary is about something, some group of people or something that, you know, Sriracha is about something that I care about, but there's a lot of people that like Sriracha. So there's a built-in community there. And then I think very importantly is this concept of tastemakers. Almost every video that goes viral, it's because someone important, someone popular found it and shared it. A lot of times in America, Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon shares a video, and that's what makes it explode. Ellen DeGeneres shares a video. These are the tastemakers. So you can't always design a video to go viral, but you can kind of help it by making a video that you know will be liked by tastemakers. Maybe you think about your audience as the tastemakers. Who are the people that are popular, that already have an audience, that will share this video? So for me, I made this very weird William Shatner video because I knew that the press would like it, that American television would love to put this on TV. And sure enough, Fox News put it on TV, the Today Show put it on TV, a bunch of media reporters wrote about it. That's exactly what we needed. People on YouTube liked it, but it needed that push. It needed help from the people that already have an audience. I think one of the problems with trying to make a video go viral is that if you plan on going viral, it won't happen. Going viral is biased against you making money. They don't want big brands to go viral. That's why it's better for unexpected and unique things to go viral. But you can kind of plan for tastemakers. You know, can you find tastemakers that can push the video out? But what I've discovered over and over and over again in my video career is that I kind of don't know what I'm doing. I've decided that if there's one thing I know about myself as a video maker, I'm naive. There's no way I can know what's possible in my career. I can never know which videos are going to go viral, which videos are going to land me a job or make money. I've just discovered that I have to make a lot of work. Just make a lot of videos, and some of them will do really well and some of them won't. But the more you make, the more opportunities you have to be successful. And I've just decided I'm too naive to even know what could possibly do well. So I just have to keep trying. A great example of this is after I made the Sriracha documentary, Bloomberg asked me if I wanted to come interview for the job covering the presidential election, which I was very surprised by. I wasn't expecting that. And they asked me to share with them three videos. So I gave them very serious videos, like the Sriracha trailer and some documentary work I've done. But when I got into the interview, my future boss, Mark Halperin, said, "Hey, what about that video you made where you were rapping?" And I was like, "Oh no, what are you talking about? This is not what I want to share in a job interview. I don't even like this video because I'm super embarrassed by it. But I'm going to show you like 10 seconds of it." Yes. Oh, I'm playing Mitt Romney.
"Oh, hi. Can a rich white guy drop by? Please join my team. Live the American dream where my millionaire donors buy the presidency. Make your checks out to Romney, Willard, Mitt, if you're nasty. Ha! But don't tax me. Just ask me to fix economies. Got two Harvard degrees. Offshore dollars from these Bain private equities. Immigrants disagree with GOP policy, but dad's born in Mexico. I, Papi Romney. 47% of you won't vote for me. Expect your stuff for free."
All right. Thank you. So if you're not familiar, Mitt Romney was running for president against Barack Obama in, what was that, 2012, before 2012. And I decided to make a silly YouTube video about him. I made it really for me. I guess I made the content I wanted to see. I thought this should exist. And I didn't think it would lead to anything ever. It's weird. But Mark saw it and said, "You know, this proves that you understand politics, that you understand comedy, that I get the nuance of politics." So I never would have shared this. This is why I say I'm naive, because I had no idea this could get me a job. There's no reason I should have expected that. But I make a lot of work. I've made thousands of videos. And some of them lead to really exciting opportunities. And I can never know which one is going to do that. So I can't tell you exactly how to be successful in video production, exactly how to go viral. But I can give you some lessons that I think have worked for me in my career. I think the most important thing is just to make a lot of work. Keep doing it. I think young filmmakers especially feel like they can't make their film today because they need to get the perfect equipment. And there's never going to be the perfect camera. Even if you buy the camera that I use and you think that's great, someone's going to come out with a new camera in 2 months. There's always going to be better equipment. You should start making content now with what you have, with your iPhone, with, you know, record audio with a phone, whatever you have to do. But just make a lot of work, because the thing you make now, a month later you'll hate it, you'll get better. Every video makes you better, and every video can lead to a new opportunity. So make a lot of work. And then when those videos lead to opportunities, be willing to jump at them. When they asked me if I wanted to move to New York, I was living in the cornfields of Illinois, in the middle of the United States. And they asked me if I wanted to move to New York City. And I was scared, but I thought, I should do this. I should be willing to take a risk and be brave. And go to Kazakhstan when someone asked me to go to Kazakhstan. And finally, I wouldn't have expected this as important, but just be really nice to everyone. It's super important in this industry. Now that I live in New York City, I'm surrounded by very talented people. And I know there are video producers that are much more talented than me there. But I'm really nice to my coworkers. I think I was really nice in my interview at Bloomberg. And I find that people just want to work with nice people. They want to work with people that they'll get along with. So I get hired instead of more talented people because I'm polite and I'm friendly and I'm optimistic. I'm glad you like that. So do those three things. Make a lot of work, be willing to jump at opportunities, and just be really nice to everyone. And I think you'll find that very exciting things can come to you. And video is not a hard career to learn. You can learn a lot of this on YouTube. But while you have me here, I'd love to know if there's anything you want to know about video production or...
Griffin, can you please tell us how many time do you spend on a montage and work after you filmed that part you wanted to use?
Yeah. I spend a lot of time on editing because I really care about the final product. I usually edit for about 3 times longer than I shoot. So if I shoot 10 hours of footage, I'll edit for 30 hours, usually. You don't have to edit that much. I just like to put a lot. I mean, you saw how many shots were in the Sriracha trailer and in even the Mitt Romney video. There's a lot of stuff in there. So it takes me a long time.
Griffin, меня зовут Лена.
Griffin, my name is Lena.
Не было ли у вас мысли снимать художественное кино?
When I was in high school, I thought that I wanted to go to Hollywood and be a director and a screenwriter. I discovered that, one, I am a bad screenwriter. I've had to figure out in my career, what are the things that I'm good at and the things that I'm not good at? I can shoot and I can edit. I can do everything in the process myself. So that's a value I have. And maybe I'm not good at working with a big team. So Hollywood is not for me. And I've kind of figured out that I can do documentaries, I can do small internet videos very well. So I should focus on that. Filmmaking is a way to hide the things you're bad at. Just edit them out. Or don't do it that way. You don't have to make films the way that I make films. Make films the way that you do them best. And hide the things you're bad at and showcase the things you're really good at.
Спасибо.
Hey, Griffin, how are you?
I'm good. Kazakhstan has been wonderful.
Yeah, you're still there.
Yes, yeah, I'm in my hotel in Almaty, Kazakhstan right now. But the Go Viral conference is over. I did a week of talks and panels, and I learned a lot, and I shared some filmmaking tips.
It looked like quite a conference, a lot going on.
Yeah, it was really well done. It was I was invited by the U.S. consulate here, and they put together a really great event. There were about 1,000 attendees, and I met a lot of great people.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
Do you want to know what kind of meat I've been eating here?
Oh, God. Never. Not if you start the question that way, but go ahead and tell me. What kind of meat have you been eating?
They eat horse meat here.
Oh, no.
It's actually very good.
I don't like to eat fish, so you're not going to get me into horse. It's just not happening.
There's a dish here, kind of the Kazakh national dish, is called bishbarmak. And there was actually a joke in one of the panels. A moderator asked me if I might make a documentary about bishbarmak.
Ну, ты пробовал бишбармак?
I love bishbarmak.
Обожаю бишбармак.
And it's horse meat and like noodles. It's very good. And there's onions in there. And I was like, yeah, I could make a documentary about that. But I think there was like a little bit of a translation error because people were coming up to me afterwards saying like, so like, how's the documentary going? Like, you're here shooting?
That's funny.
Yeah.
So did I see you were getting live translated as you gave presentations?
Yes. So the video we just watched was my camera and my audio. I actually mic'd myself up with a lavalier mic. So you were hearing my microphone, not the handheld microphone I was holding, and you're seeing my cameras. But they were also filming it I'll put a link in the show notes to the live stream of the event, and they were doing a live translation into Russian. Thank you so much for having me.
Спасибо за то, что пригласили меня. Меня зовут Гриффин Хэммонд. Я документалист, в Нью-Йорк-Сити живу.
Wow. So was the translation only for the live broadcast, or was it also in the room?
It was also in the room. What you could do as a listener is, it felt like half my audience spoke English and half the audience was listening in Russian, because I would hear like a reaction to what I would say, and then a few seconds later I'd hear a second reaction.
So would they have, for the Russian speakers, did they have the earpieces basically?
Yeah, they were just plugging into their phones, and there was like a live streaming site.
That's clever.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Interesting. And did you meet your translator?
Only in some of my events I did like concurrent translation, where I would speak a sentence and then he would speak a sentence. So I met that translator. But when I was doing the big stage keynote that you just saw, I don't even know where the translator was, somewhere backstage.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah. But I really like it here. The weather is perfect for running. It's very scenic in the mountains, and the food is great. People are wonderful. If you ever get a chance to go to Almaty, Kazakhstan, you should.
Yeah, it's beautiful here in Las Vegas. My car thermometer said 122 today. Now, the official weather only said like 115, but it's pretty hot. Pretty hot. The air conditioner is working overtime here.
And you, I just saw you posted a photo. You got your GH5 or your
G85? Dun da da da. Panasonic G85 with Lumix 12 to 35 constant f/2.8 aperture lens.
Even though I can't see you, I'm guessing from your dun da 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 that you're showing it off, meaning you're not actually filming with it right now?
That's right. I have not really had time to fully set it up and play with it. So
yeah.
Still shooting with the trusty GH3. Nothing wrong with the GH3.
Yeah.
Though I think this lens is going to be better for this shot, because I'm shooting on a 15mm right now, which
yeah.
is just a little tighter than the lens you use. So I think being able to go to 12 right. is going to match our shots a little better.
Well, so yeah, I've been using the 12mm prime, so you'd be able to use the 12mm as well. The only difference will be that my lens is an f1.4 lens, and I'm often shooting at f1.6. That's what I'm doing right now. Your lens is a zoom lens, so it'll be limited to f2.8.
What am I shooting at now? Can I half press without stopping my recording?
You could.
I can. Oh, I'm shooting at f2.8. What do you know?
Oh, okay. So the shot will look pretty much the same as shallow depth of field.
The same crappy shot I always have. Sorry.
No, just wider.
Just wider, indeed.
So, should we get to some questions?
Let's do it. Let's get to some questions.
Our first question is a YouTube comment from Scott Sullivan, and he's wondering about HEVC. I don't often see that acronym. I actually don't know what it stands for, but it's H.265 compression.
Yeah, it's the next generation of video compression.
Do you know what HEVC stands for?
High Efficiency Video Codec.
Yeah, that makes sense. And he says he knows it's a better codec than H.264, which is what almost all video on the internet right now is.
High efficiency video coding. High efficiency video coding. I was close.
But he also knows that H.265 is not currently supported by much, and he's just wondering what the difference is. Is this the future of web publishing?
I think it will be, yes. It's not yet. Nothing you have to get too worked up about just yet until some more support is there. It can compress much smaller files.
Right.
The cost, though, is a lot more CPU usage when you're decoding it. So whatever's playing it back has to be a lot more powerful, has to
right.
use more battery, that kind of thing. So it's a trade-off. Apple
and also, like when you're compressing it, you're using more CPU power, too.
Right.
Like yep. Yeah. So, because I've done some encoding with, in fact, isn't it called like, am I confusing my acronyms? Isn't there something like VP9 or something?
Or is it that's like another one. That's a Google format. I don't think it's H.265 though. I think it's their own open source thing.
I think maybe I've tried both, and they both take like, it was like 5 to 10 times longer than my normal compression to create the file. But yeah, it's like the same size but higher quality.
Right. So, like, I think most 4K streaming, like, if you do 4K Netflix streaming, I think it's coming down at is H.265. I could be wrong about that, but I think so. New iPhones supporting H.265, Apple announced, including the iPhone 7 you've already got in your pocket, which is nice.
Yeah. But this is always the case with compression. It's just the compression always gets more and more CPU heavy, and it's just a matter of people having more powerful computers to handle the current compression.
You got it.
So I actually have been going the opposite direction recently. I've been doing all these presentations all over the world, and I'm using my laptop, and I don't want my laptop working too hard. So I've actually been creating like ProRes files.
Oh, ProRes, yeah, okay.
So they're less processor intensive. It's easier for the computer to play them, but they take up more space on the hard drive. So my presentation files are giant, and it's hard for me to like send them to someone. But I know they're going to play back without lagging, and the computer can do it easier.
Perfect.
So kind of the opposite of H.265.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what's your constraint? Is it CPU power or is it bandwidth? And, you know, you got to find a balance.
Our next
question. You
want to
read this next one?
Yeah. It's from Joshua Botello, also a YouTube comment. And he's a freelance videographer and doing studio shoots for public access television. And I guess he's having some trouble with audio equipment. He's using like the client's audio gear to record these interviews. And he's just wondering like, how do we record a two-person interview? And also like, how many angles do you get video-wise? You never have to shoot any interviews.
Not very often.
Not for weddings,
anymore.
Yeah.
No.
And rarely,
but I would use a lav usually if I were faced with something like that, if I could, but.
Yeah.
On each person.
I've used lav mics on two-person interviews for television, and that's especially if you're going to get a wide shot and there's just no place to put a shotgun mic. But a lot of times I'm shooting like three angles. I'll set up a wide shot in the middle, and then I'll just have two pretty much exactly the same close-ups of each person. But if you were just going to do two tight close-ups, you probably could get away with setting up like two shotgun mics. There's a lot of ways you could do this.
Yep, or even a boom mic above might work.
Yeah. And I would just caution you to... He's talking about like putting... He was shooting them in like an L-shaped bar, like they were sitting in a bar. And I guess I always spend a lot of time kind of staging the way they're sitting because I want to make sure they're not like... A lot of times I don't put them completely facing each other. I might cheat them a little bit towards the camera so that we're not getting like a profile shot of each person. I kind of want to see the front of their body and their face. And then I guess just bring the cameras far enough around so that you're actually seeing them and it's not completely in profile. But you have a lot of control in those situations to set it up the way you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got another YouTube comment from My Gmail, who we heard from last week.
That's right.
I actually asked him, like, well, he heard us say on the podcast that, like, what's the deal with your username? And he actually said that he uses this account to troll a lot. But I guess he's not trolling us. His questions to us have been great.
But maybe it's a long troll, you know? Maybe we're playing right into his game. You never know.
He says that he's heard a lot of people debate over Vlog L and wondering if that should be shot in 8-bit or 10-bit. And he's saying he thinks it should be 10-bit for grading. And he's wondering if we can explain the debate.
Well, I would think if you're going to the trouble of shooting Vlog, you probably want 10-bit, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking that the other day. Like, I don't know why you would ever shoot 8-bit if you're shooting Vlog. If the whole point of shooting Vlog is to have the maximum latitude for color correction... Vlog is this color profile you can use on the GH4 and the GH5, probably some of the other Panasonic cameras, and it's just a really flat image profile. And the whole point of shooting 10-bit is to have more color data that your colorist can work with, so that when you do some crazy pushing of the color correction, it doesn't mess up the image too much.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know why you'd ever shoot 8-bit Vlog.
Yeah. Now, if you're just shooting something like, say, a podcast for YouTube, I don't shoot Vlog, I don't shoot 10-bit, and just keep it simple.
Right. I mean, I actually shoot everything in 8-bit, because I don't think I need 10-bit for most of the work that I do.
We got a YouTube comment from Halderded, I
think you got it. Haldard?
Haldard. Yeah, that sounds better. Not Haldarded. I don't know what I said. Do Android users just not listen to podcasts?
And yeah, last week we were talking about iTunes releasing data to podcasters, and we were saying that most of our listeners, most of the people who are not watching on YouTube, most of the listeners are listening through iTunes.
So I guess so. Android yeah. users are not listening to podcasts. I don't know.
I actually looked up the data on Podtrac, and of our listeners, 64% of people are listening through the podcasts app on the iPhone or through Apple iTunes. And it says that less than 1% listen through Android, but I kind of think that there's probably a lot of categories of reporting in this data that might actually be Android that don't show up as Android. Like it says 26% of our listeners are unknown. So
there's your Android right there.
Yeah. And then there's other things that show up like Mozilla and stuff, which could be on a browser or like a desktop browser, or maybe they're on an Android phone.
Yeah.
We have a YouTube comment from Ryan Helmert, who says that he is a young videographer and looking for a new camera, and he doesn't know if he should go with the Sony a6500 with two lenses or a Panasonic GA85 with two lenses and two batteries. I don't know the pricing on those cameras. Is he saying that they're the same, but he could afford two batteries with the G85?
I'm dancing with my G85 right now, showing it off.
I'm going to say G85.
Yeah, both are great cameras, but my guess is an A6500 with two lenses is going to be more expensive than a G85 with two lenses, because those Sony lenses are crazy expensive. But maybe he's saying that two lenses and two batteries evens out with the A6500. I think we're Panasonic guys, so we're going to say Panasonic probably, but I don't think you'll go wrong with either one. So,
right. I don't have experience with either camera, actually, so I don't want to speak to it. But I have heard a lot of people say nice things about the A6500, even in my traveling talking about the GH5. That's often a camera that people say, well, hey, what about the A6500? You know, obviously people like the Sony A7S. But I've been surprised how often the A6500 name has come up. So certainly worth investigating. And if you prefer that brand, it's probably a great option.
Griffin, can I ask you a question about the Panasonic cameras?
Yeah.
Okay, so I just got this camera, and I'm rotating it back and forth. And I noticed this before I put the lens on. The sensor moves a lot. Does the GH5 do that too?
It does, and I've noticed that's the big difference between the GH4, which didn't have in-body image stabilization, and the GH5, which does, is even when it's turned off and you're just holding the camera walking around, you can kind of feel something shifting inside.
Yeah, it's the like when the lens was off, like the sensor was just, I thought my sensor was broken. I really thought I was going to turn on the camera and it wasn't going to work. But I guess it's just the in-body image stabilization isn't on, but it has all that room to move, so the sensor just bounces around in there.
I think so. I've seen a lot of comments like that. People going like, is something wrong with my camera? But it doesn't.
I thought the exact same. I just didn't know what I was looking at. I was like, that sensor is broken. I'm in trouble.
But if yours is like mine, it doesn't feel like it's rattling around. It's not like it's banging up against
it. It kind of goes just dunk, kind of dunk, dunk. You can feel it kind of thunk.
Yeah. Well, I imagine they've built it in a way to protect that movement.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a different feel. Our final question today is an email from George Watkins, and it's directed at you, Nick. He's saying that he knows you're an Apple guy and you know a lot about computers, and he's looking at getting a new Windows laptop for editing 4K video and wants to spend as little as possible, preferably below £1,000. How much is £1,000?
I looked it up. It's $1,273.56.
All right, let's spend less than that 56 cents. he's heard that using a dual-core Intel i7 processor would not be enough and would need to go for a quad-core i7 instead. And he's also wondering, would a 2 GB GPU be sufficient also, or would he need to go higher than that?
Yeah, well, I think you can do a lot for around $1,200. If you can swing it, you definitely want a quad-core processor. I can tell you my current MacBook Pro is dual-core and not quad-core, and it's one of the things I don't like about it. But Final Cut Pro 10 on a Mac is a little more forgiving of hardware than Windows and Adobe Premiere, so I would definitely get a quad-core one. And you can tell when you're looking at the when it tells you what kind of processor it's of, it'll say like i7 dash some numbers and some letters, and you want a Q in there. The Q is for quad core, so keep an eye out for that. GPU less important. If it's got 2 gigs of GPU RAM, it's probably a decent GPU, and that'll be fine. I would worry less about that. I would definitely want at least an SSD boot drive. At that price point, you probably aren't going to be able to get a really big SSD, but maybe you can get one that has a small SSD boot drive and then a bigger spinning hard disk for video files. In fact, I pulled up... Dell makes an Inspiron 15 7000 Gaming Edition, which I know it's for gaming, but it actually specs up pretty nice for video editing too. It's an i7 quad core, 16 gigs of RAM. I think with 4K video, you're going to want more than 8 gigs, so I would look for 16 gigs of RAM if you can get it. It's got a 128 gig solid state drive and a terabyte spinning hard disk for video files. It's got a GeForce GTX 1050 graphics card with 4 gigs of RAM. It's a 15 inch screen, and it's $1,100 USD. So,
can you put that in the show notes?
Oh, I can put it in the show notes.
At hey.film.
At hey.film.
Is that the case that usually like good gaming computers are good editing computers?
Yeah, especially I think at a budget. Obviously, there are professional workstation GPUs, which are more in line for video editing and graphics and things like that, and you're not going to get that in a gaming laptop, but you'll get 90% of the way there.
I haven't kept up with hard drive pricing. Like, what does it cost to get like a 500 gig SSD these days?
That is a good question. I can tell you at my work, we sell 16 terabyte SSDs, but they're very expensive.
What?
one little tiny hard drive, 2.5 inch, 16 terabytes. You got to buy those 12
of them. What is that, like $10,000 or something?
I think 24 of them is over $1 million, so... Do the math.
And so you, I mean, I've known you for so many years, and you've always been like my the guy that I go to for computer questions. And we used to always build computers together in high school and beyond. You had for a long time been a Windows guy. Why did you make the jump to Apple?
For video editing. And actually, so I've got my Mac laptop, which I use for my laptop and video editing, and I have a Windows desktop that I built myself for gaming, so I actually use both.
Okay.
In front of me here is Windows 10, and over here is OS 10.
Yeah.
They each have their own place, and you can get a 500 gig SSD for $175 now.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Are a lot of these Windows laptops easily... upgradable yourself, unlike the unibody Macs, or is everything
probably
a unibody now?
Easy. No, these are probably easier, at least. I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't mess with laptops. I just buy Macs desktops for upgrading. That's what I build myself.
Yeah. Hey, before we go, there was something I was supposed to do a few weeks ago that I forgot to do. When I was in Manila, Philippines, I met a lot of really cool people who attended my workshops, but I actually had a specific request from 4 fans of ours in the Philippines from Manila. They just wanted me to give them a shout out to Eileen, Ace, Isra, and Shun.
Woo!
They're from UNTV and from ADD Productions, and I meant to say something nice about them a few weeks ago after I was there, but hey, I'm in Kazakhstan now. Hello from Kazakhstan.
Woohoo! Awesome. How come you never say anything nice about me on the show?
I think me talking to you for like 40 minutes a week is a really nice thing.
Nice for you, maybe. All right, buddy, what else we got? That's the end of the notes you've got here.
That's it.
Quick and easy. I love it.
This is my final day in Kazakhstan, so I'll probably walk around a little bit. Anything you want to know about Central Asia and Kazakhstan before I go?
Just whatever you're going to tell me, my friend. I look forward to your horse meat documentary.
My Bishbarmak documentary.
That's what I said.
Yeah. Horse meat. Well, for any Russian listeners, we have spasiba for listening today. And we'll see you next Wednesday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Guess what? I got a fidget spinner. They just spin and spin.